Hey everyone, welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Walden with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and tonight I finally get to have a guest on that I've wanted to have on for at least 46 of the 47 episodes that I've done thus far, and that's my friend Gene Bramble from footballguys.com. Gene, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is great. You know, and for many of you who, you know, may listen to the RSP Cast, you may know Gene from fantasy football and with Football Guys, where he does a lot of work with injuries and the Injuries Expectations article, which is just a fantastic read, well-researched. And, you know, obviously with his background, you know, it gives you a really nice edge in terms of understanding what's going on with these players health-wise. But, you know, many people who are old-times Football Guys subscribers, if I can use words correctly now, I am a writer after all, I think, is that, you know, Gene's kind of used to be probably even more so the secret weapon of Football Guys with his IDP content, individual defensive content, and Gene just has a really fantastic eye for the defensive side of the football. And And if you have seen any of the RSP film rooms that we did in the past, they're probably some of the more popular film rooms I've done on the defensive side of the ball with anybody. He has a really good eye for detail. So it's always great to be able to have him on a show. And now that we get to talk about defense at the Senior Bowl, this is what our show is going to cover, is the defensive prospects. So, you know, Gene, just to begin with, you know, we are at the end of day three of practice. We're leaving tomorrow morning. And, you know, just getting started from, you know, Tuesday's practice heading to now, who are some of the guys that you looked at on Tuesday and had initial insights about them that, you know, kind of set the baseline for where you were going with them as the week progressed?
Well, as I've transitioned to primarily writing about injury stuff, I frankly don't pay as much attention to the defensive side of the ball as I used to, and especially the prospects. When we first started coming down here 6-7 years ago, there were times where I'd spent, you know, maybe 3 or 4 games evaluating each player, having a pretty good sense of what I wanted to see and what I was looking for when I came down here. The last couple of years, it's kind of been the opposite, in that I was hoping to learn about these players as we go and then go back and watch them on tape based on what I've seen. So a lot of my first impressions were built on what other folks in the industry, many of the folks that you've already had on your podcast, had to say about these guys. So, you know, the general consensus, and I think it's likely to prove an accurate one, is that the front seven is going to spend, Roger Goodell is going to spend a lot of time talking about the front seven on those, on the first day of the draft in particular, and probably partway through the second and third days as well, with a ton of edge rushing prospects. Most of them are juniors, but a couple of them, Josh Allen out of Kentucky, was originally scheduled to be here and decided not to come. Montez Sweat is here. Some folks feel like he's got a chance to be a top 20 pick, so he was somebody that we wanted to watch for sure. But the South roster was filled with edge rushing prospects, and there were a couple of guys on the North as well, so just sort of wanted to see. And that's kind of one of my loves when I come down here anyway, is to see what goes on in the OLDL pit repetitions, where we get a lot of one-on-one time, and see how those guys can handle whatever offensive line talent is here. And then I like to pay attention to some of the off-the-ball linebackers as well and get a sense of whether or not we can see in those one-on-one sessions whether or not they can handle enough coverage to either be an every-down prospect or, in today's NFL, be somebody that's going to spend a lot of time on the field as a nickelbacker. So there are a few of those guys as well. So Montez Sweat was definitely at the top of the list of somebody who wanted to see if he lived up to the billing of players we've seen here in the past, like Ezekiel Ansah, or Melvin Ingram, or Dee Ford, or so many other guys as we go. But there were a few other names as well. And linebackers, I don't know that there was a consensus possible first-round pick or even early second-day pick on the roster, but I think there were a couple of guys that we'll talk about here soon that were able to put themselves in position where they've shown that they have an every-down projection. One player in particular that a lot of the folks who follow the draft carefully were hoping to see was Terrell Hanks, who was getting comparisons to Darius Leonard as a kind of long, athletic player who probably would have an every down projection, but folks just weren't sure based on his pedigree whether or not he'd be able to hold up there or not.
Well, I mean, that's great. I mean, let's just begin with Sweat, because obviously he is one of the marquee names that are here, that is here. And How did you think he performed? Did he live up to the billing?
Yeah, I don't think he disappointed. At times, there were, you know, where he didn't necessarily... You know, we watched D Ford here. It was evident on nearly every repetition that he was just flying around the edge and causing havoc, both one-on-one and in the team drills, to the point where he was having so much fun that we nicknamed him Wee Ford, because that you'd be screaming coming around the corner knowing that he was about to get a chance to just tap the quarterback because they can't be taken down to the ground. Same thing goes with Melvin Ingram and otherwise. I don't think Montez Sweat had that type of week where he was – everybody was oohing and aahing over him. And you know, even though if you'll read on Twitter, there are a few folks out there saying that, you know, he may have solidified himself as a top 20 pick. I don't know that I'd go that far if for no other reason than there's probably four or five juniors and Josh Allen who may be you know, for sure, Nick Bosa and Josh Allen are probably there, but there's another three or four guys that are going to be considered in that same point in the conversation. So I don't know if he did quite that much, but he definitely didn't disappoint. He was clearly the most consistent edge rusher. He was clearly the one that won more often than not. There's some concerns about whether or not he's too stiff to get around the edge consistently, and maybe you saw that here, but I think his the move he prefers is kind of a long-armed, one arm longer than two lockout situation that he uses both when he's anchoring against the run and when he's trying to edge rush, and he works off of that. And that looks a little bit stiff because he's got everything extended, and it's, you know, it's part edge, it's part bull rush. So you wonder whether or not he's a pure edge speed guy or not, and he didn't really show that too often here. There were some times in team drills where he was pretty quick around the edge and dipped and flattened. So I don't know that he did so much that he's going to push aside a couple of the juniors ahead of him. He may still be the fifth or sixth pass rusher off the board. But with the importance of that position, arguably the second most important position in football behind the quarterback at this point, depending on who you read and what defensive coordinator is targeting what type of player, he may still come off the board in the middle to the latter half of the first round.
So who else in Mobile at the edge rushing positions either impressed or gained some ground in this particular week of practices?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody did, to be honest. I think everybody else was inconsistent, surprising at times, disappointing at times in their own way.
Well, how about those guys then? What happened there?
So I think the entire South roster was interesting and were, you know, as I did some prep on Sunday night into Monday, you know, who do we want to see, who may, who's looking to improve their stock here? The whole South side, from Carl Granderson to O'Shane Ximenes to Jalen Ferguson, and then even Jonathan Ledbetter, who was arguably probably the fifth most anticipated player on that South roster as far as edge rushers goes. And these guys, you know, again, I think you would consider Ferguson and Granderson as edge rushing prospects. They're all similar in that, well, Ledbetter's a little bit bigger and he's a little bit more of a true base end. But when we're talking about Granderson and Ximenes and Ferguson, they're all in that 6'3 to 6'5 range. They're all in that 240 to 255 range where you're looking at long, athletic players. All of them were inconsistent in their own way. And I realize I'm defining Ferguson, who's now the NCAA's all-time sack leader, as inconsistent. But all those guys had to show that their consistency was there, that they had some sort of plan with their pass rush attack. And I don't know that we saw that every time. Each, you know, you go through the notes, and on one rep, it looked like they put it all together from hands to feet to you know, functional strength, all the things that you need as a pass rusher. But I don't know that anybody else on these rosters consistently showed that they can be a factor immediately. And I know you talk about this a lot with tight ends. I talk about this a lot with the edge rushing prospects. You know, as I think the transition from college to the NFL is huge for an edge rusher, and that the caliber of talent they face at the offensive tackle position is exceptionally higher than what they face regularly in college. A lot of these guys can win athleticism alone, and they don't have to worry about hand placement, or they don't have to worry about directing their lower body to the quarterback. They don't have to worry about generating a consistent counter move or moves. And I think we see that sometimes down here in Mobile. We saw that with Ezekiel Ansah in practices where, you know, he was a highly regarded player, was thought to be a first-round pick, and didn't show up necessarily as consistently in practice as he did in the game and then early on in his NFL career. And it may be that Jalen Ferguson or Carl Granderson is going to be that guy, or Charles Omenihu on the north side, you know, a similar 6'6", you know, 250, 260, kind of that long athletic type player to be able to put those things together. But, you know, the consistency wasn't there, and there were certainly some repetitions where he thought, I don't really know what's going on there. You know, do you have a plan? Do you have the ability to consistently pull off an edge rush or start as an edge rusher and convert to some sort of power or counter move? And each of those players struggled in their own way.
Yeah, so when we're talking about edge rushers as well, one of the things that, you know, getting a chance to listen to you and John Owning chop it up a bit and watch some of the film of those guys, you're talking about some of the drills there, like in the pit. And one of the things that I noticed is you had these coaches who simulated being the quarterback. And one of the things that just kind of caught my eye as you guys were discussing it was the idea that the coaches playing quarterback weren't realistically dropping back into in a rhythm or in a position where the edge rusher would realistically be tracking where that guy goes and what the, and that kind of messed with their trajectory and how they're actually operating the drill, if you know, based on how it looked. Am I off base there? And what are some other things about that drill that you know, that kind of lend to not being as realistic or very realistic?
I know that you speak about this often with the running back drills and, you know, all the offensive skill position drills as well, in that they are fun to watch. You can glean some good information from them. Certain drills are set up for the offense to be successful. Certain drills are set up for the defense to be successful. But there's a lot that's not realistic about them. And first and foremost is, you know, you're trying to simulate a snap count, but it's a one-on-one situation. The entire offensive line lines up. There's no other players involved generally. So sometimes what looks like a win for a defensive player really isn't. So you'll see a player drive all the way upfield and kind of flatten and turn toward the quarterback at 10 yards, and it's extraordinarily rare for a quarterback to, you know, to continue to drop back. You know, you'd rather see them climb the pocket. So, you know, sometimes you'll see a Russell Wilson or somebody else kind of back out and spin out and maybe get to that 10 to 12 yard spot. But if you are consistently ending your edge rush and starting it toward the quarterback at 8 to 10 yards, you're going to be behind the pocket. And even if it looks like you've beaten the offensive tackle in these one-on-one drills, it's probably not a successful repetition. Similarly, both the outside edge guys and the inside interior reps, when we see these one-on-one things, sometimes you'll see an inside counter move that takes them all the way to the other hash mark. And again, you're going to be running into center, guard, all the trash in the center, and you may look like you've had a successful inside counter, but if you're not moving toward the quarterback at this point and you're moving flattened across the pocket, that's probably not a successful rep either. And you're right, we did notice that, you know, the Raiders, with the North in particular, had an assistant there who would move around the pocket a little bit, and you want these guys to rush toward the quarterback. Ultimately, that's the goal, right, is we're trying to sack the quarterback or at least disrupt the pocket and move the pocket. But sometimes the way the assistant moved the pocket in a way that just, it was something that the rusher did not anticipate. There were a couple of reps with Zach Allen in particular where the assistant would move back 3 or 4 yards, and you had seen Allen try to generate a little bit of an inside counter, see the assistant move back a little bit, and then get stonewalled because he was trying again then to readjust and move deeper into the pocket rather than the successful counter he'd already done. And it makes it look like that the rusher is struggling when maybe he really hasn't and had already won that part of the drill. So there's a lot that's not realistic, but again, you're trying to find consistency, some sort of technical prowess that gets the offensive tackle off schedule in some way, either back on the heels or convinces them that they need to take an extra step and overset because they fear an edge rush, those sorts of things. Just trying to see some level of consistency and some sort of technical skill. There, as I said, there's a lot of times where it looks like there's a win for the defense when that particular win would not have been successful in a real game situation.
So let's move into the inside and the interior line a little bit. Were there any war daddies or disruptors here that you would look at and feel pretty strongly about, or even guys who you might look at as a day two pick that has some promise?
Yeah, I don't think there was a war daddy. There were a couple of guys here that were here as true nose tackles, you know, folks that are going to anchor and maybe be a two gap or, you know, a shade nose or something like that. I don't know that those players have anywhere near the capability of some of the juniors that are going to be in this draft. Again, this is another situation where the first round this year, at least on the defensive side of the ball, is just going to be filled with juniors and redshirt sophomores. And those players obviously weren't here. But there were a number of players that showed they could be disruptive off the ball, consistently or not. And, you know, we start talking about interior defensive linemen, and probably these edge rushers, I don't know that they need to be on the field for 50 to 60 snaps. So if they can give you 20 to 30 very good reps, if they can get two or three plays a game where they're disruptive on the interior, they're going to be productive members of your team. We've been talking for years that, you know, used to have maybe 11 starters, possibly a slot cornerback, and, you know, you'd be playing 11 to 13 guys on the defense. Right now, it's very much a league where a minimum of 15, and oftentimes you're rotating 18 to 20 guys through the defensive side of the ball. So even if you don't have a player that looks like he can be an all-around interior force, we're going to have guys, it's their job to be disruptive against the run, whether it be as an anchor or a penetrator, and the same thing goes for guys in those nickel situations, whether it's the edge rushers that come down a little bit because they've got the ability to become a three technique and rush, or some of these other defensive tackles, your Gerald McCoys and those sorts of players that are penetrating against in pass rush situations. And there's no Aaron Donald here this year. There's probably not going to be an Aaron Donald here for another decade or two. He was definitely fun to watch. Some of the Aaron Donald, Zach Martin confrontations in the pit were amazing a few years ago. Those players are not here. But I think one player on each side of the roster is Ronnell Wren, somebody that's been talked about consistently. Just a huge lower body, but he's 6'4". He's drawing some comparisons to Chris Jones, who's a very good all-around defensive tackle in Kansas City. Talked to Josh Norris, heard Fran Duffy make those comparisons as well. Very long, but understands leverage. There were a couple of plays in which you would have had no idea he was 6'4", as low as he got and driving up underneath the pads. Very quick feet, able to use his hands well, but really converts quickly into a bull rush opportunity. And he was one of the inside guys who wasn't taking, you know, three or four steps laterally to win against the centers and guards. It was a step here, step there. Yes, he was high sometimes. Yes, there was some hops in his step, but it looks like he's going to be a productive player. Whether he's a second day pick is going to be hard to project at this point. And then Daylon Mack, Texas A&M defensive tackle, who came up from the Shrine game, built similarly to Wren in the lower body, but a little bit more shorter and more stout. But similar type of player, very quick for his size, got some heavy hands, very good pad level. He dropped a center square on his ass one time just by getting up underneath his pads and driving him back. Very low for a guy that's 6'1", 327. Sometimes you see those players that they're not flexible enough to get low, and that wasn't the case with Mac. There's a few other guys here that are probably going to fit into those rotational roles, but I think as far as the senior defensive tackle class goes, Christian Wilkins wasn't here from Clemson, but of the players that are here, those two seniors are probably going to be close to the cream of the crop.
Where would Mac and Wren fit best in, you know, in terms of scheme and team?
Well, I think they could probably do a little bit of both. I don't think we would consider either of them right now disruptive enough to truly be pass rushers in nickel situations. Both of them showed the ability to do that here. But in the team sessions, they were more disruptive against the run. They needed to be accounted for in the interior of the defensive line. And there were plays where they weren't successful doing that. So I still think you're looking at rotational players, and players like that probably have a role in any scheme. I think you would consider them penetrators, certainly Wren. So you're probably not going to see him as a zero technique or, you know, a two-gapping nose tackle, that sort of stuff. They're not necessarily built to be three techniques either, but they're probably going to be one-gap penetrators. I don't think you're going to see them too much in passing situations, but that all depends on how they develop. We've seen plenty of players over time who didn't look like pass rushers and developed for lots of different reasons. And, you know, maybe you put a player like Ronnell Wren and you surround him with three or four other good pass rushers on nickel downs. You have him in there because you know he's going to help the run when you've got a nickel or a dime defense, so many of these that we're seeing. And he's able to give you a little bit of pass rush if it ends up being a pass, but not allow the interior of your line to completely get overrun because you don't have a defensive tackle in there that's capable of anchoring against the run.
Well, speaking of the run, you know, I wouldn't call it the running back of the defense, because most people call it the quarterback of the defense, which is middle linebacker. But still, the linebackers, talking about them, you know, who I saw a lot of guys when just looking at the weigh-in, you know, and I don't, you know, obviously everybody knows I don't really watch these positions for the Senior Bowl, but a lot of these guys were like 230, you know, seemed kind of light. And I know that the position's getting a little bit lighter as we get into more spreading things out. But were there quality players in this class in terms of we're looking at them from a, you know, rotational starter point of view in the future?
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised at how well three or four of these guys played here. And then there's a couple of kind of hybrid types where, you know, maybe they weren't seen as traditional linebackers that folks were kind of drooling over before they got here and acquitted themselves fairly well. I had read some good things about Jermaine Pratt and Cameron Smith as kind of instinctive talents that might have every down projections. They didn't impress me as much as a few other players here. I think the player that impressed me the most was Bobby Okereke out of Stanford. And you're right, all these guys are kind of in that 6'1", almost 5'11", David Long and Dre Greenlaw. Neither one of them measured over 6 feet tall at the weigh-in. But this is where we've been for almost half a decade now, where, you know, you think back to Telvin Smith, and, you know, we're just not getting those 6'2", 240-pound linebackers. Now, you know, last year, you know, Edmonds was 6'5", and 250, and Darius Leonard definitely had at least some height, if not size. You know, his height-weight combination was still on the thinner side. And there are still some of those players out there, but right now, you know, if you're in that nickel defense, you've got to have somebody that's heavy enough to stand up against the run if there's only six guys in the box. And you've got to have somebody that's rangy enough to get outside and chase down your Christian McCaffreys and your James White and those type of players when they're catching the ball out of the backfield, and still be able to hold their own in some sort of coverage, whether it be zone drops or in a man situation underneath. So, you know, a lot of these guys that we see at the Senior Bowl tend to be limited, and in the past they had been limited in a way where you felt like they were only two down guys against the run. Now, some of the folks that are being invited are probably okay in coverage, and you're wondering how they're going to hold up in the other direction. So you're seeing limitations in both ways, and I don't think, in no way is 230 considered small anymore. When we first started doing this 15 to 20 years ago, it was. I can remember people thinking, D'Amico Ryans, how in the world is he going to hold up at 235 pounds? Well, he held up just fine. We could go on and on and on.
Yeah, certainly.
About the number of players that were just scraping 230. I think Telvin Smith finished a year at 219 a couple of years ago. So Okereke was known to be instinctive. There were some questions about whether or not he'd have enough range and or coverage to be successful as an every down projection. I didn't have any concerns watching him here. Now, again, you know, the defensive players are not allowed to take running backs and wide receivers to the ground, so there are some limitations here. But what I tend to look for is, you know, is the player where he's supposed to be in team drills, especially the 9-on-7s, when the offense is mostly running plays? And are they comfortable with where they're supposed to be? And Okereke pretty regularly, you know, he just looked like he was gliding in this gap responsibility where he was supposed to be. He scraped very well, but when there was a chance to come downhill, he was able to do that. But more importantly than that, the coverage concerns, I felt like he was arguably the best coverage linebacker here in drills this week. He was not afraid to come and jam a player at the line. He had very good feet. He mirrored routes well. He had some recovery speed, not great. There were a couple of, strangely, Tampa 2 in 9-on-7 drills that were shown by the south side, and he quickly, fluidly with his hips got very good depth with that, so he doesn't look uncomfortable in coverage at all. So I think if there was a concern about an every down projection for him coming into this week, I would imagine many scouts don't have as much of that concern anymore. Obviously tape sells the story. We'll see how he handles the game situation against some of the better competition here, but it looks like he is going to have that sort of he's going to be in that conversation now. Does that put him early in the second day of the draft? Or are we still looking at a third or fourth round linebacker? That's something else to see based on how the other positions play out. And there's at least three other players ahead of him in the junior class, I would say. But I think I was most impressed with him. David Long came in out of West Virginia. It's another smaller 5'11", 230 is what he weighed in at. It's kind of a run and hit projection. He was impressive in that once he saw an opportunity, he was not hesitant at all. He was very aggressive, almost knifing in the way that he defended the run a little bit. He was a little bit, I call it grabbing and guessing in these one-on-one repetitions, and that leads him to kind of overplay and get himself out of position at times. But he's quick enough and agile enough that I think there's a coverage projection there for him as well. I don't think he was, from a size standpoint, from a comfort standpoint, as impressive as Okereke was, but I think that projection is still there. Another player that I was, you know, on that north side, we heard a lot about Jermaine Pratt and Tavon Coney and Cameron Smith as well, as players that might have been the class of that particular side of the rosters this week. But I thought Greenlaw, I don't think he was as good as Okereke, but he looked very good, reading and reacting pretty well, handled himself in coverage without too much difficulty at all. Didn't see a lot of grabbing and guessing out of him. I think there's some every down potential there as well. He's a little bit on the smaller side. Had plenty of 5'11 linebackers in the league, but you know, in this particular tier of people that he's going up against, he may fall to the third day of the draft without too much difficulty.
Okay, sounds like an interesting group there, at least from a drafting standpoint. You know, in terms of, you know, year two down the line, what these guys could develop into. How about the safeties? Nasir Adderley seems to be a headliner that I hear, but how did you feel about what you saw with this group?
I didn't watch the defensive back group really at all this year. I was primarily focusing on a lot of the front seven guys. I think it just gets hard to adequately evaluate them. But yes, I think the disappointing thing for most of the scouts here that I talked to was that Jonathan Abram was not able to go with the injury that was picked up in the physical process before the game started. They identified some sort of shoulder condition. And he stayed around for meetings and interviews and such, but was not able to play. And he was expected to be the class of the group here. Nasir Adderley out of Delaware was the other player that most folks were hoping to see. As I was watching the linebackers in running back versus linebacker drills, the safeties were taking on some of the tight ends, and in the 7-on-7 work, you could see some of that as well. Frankly, what I noticed was that the safeties really didn't seem very capable in coverage. I don't know if you pick that up against some of the tight ends or not. There were multiple, and there's one particular player that every time I looked up was really struggling. Safety out of Kentucky, Mike Edwards, I guess I'm going to call him out. But it may have been that there were other players that struggled just as much, but lots of grabbing, lots of trailing, lots of just plain guessing in a route, hoping that you were correct. Not a lot of recovery speed there. And again, that's not a rigorous interpretation of what was going on by any stretch. It was just sort of an anecdotal picking this up while I was glancing back and forth between repetitions and the other drills I was watching.
Yeah, well, I mean, as someone who did watch the tight end tape a good bit, you know, this group was routinely getting separation on intermediate and deep routes, you know, seam routes, corner routes, deep outs. You know, they were able to kind of basically bang into these guys and get open in some of these regards as well. And none of these tight ends, as you mentioned, I mean, I think it was, I think it was Brad Kelly of NDT Scouting who mentioned, kind of described Donald Parham as a gazelle. And you were like, from my point of view, his speed's more giraffe-like as opposed to, you know, his fluidity and movement.
He's 6'8". And...
Yeah, 240.
Just, you know, if we're going to compare somebody to an animal.
Yeah, exactly.
You're 6'8", I'm going to choose the taller animal, I guess.
Exactly, right? So, but a little bit more of a loping frame. And a lot of these tight ends kind of were, they're not the class of this group. You know, I mean, the class of this position are guys like TJ Hawkinson and Irv Smith, and maybe Noah Font might get an opportunity to be mentioned in there. There's a few other guys, but Dax Raymond and Moreau and Parham and Oliver, I mean, these guys, there's some promise with what they can do, but none of them would be described as burners. And so they were fluid, but they were slow. And the fact that they were slowly getting past these safeties, I think, does hit it on the head in terms of how you mentioned it. So, you know, overall, I mean, you know, looking at this class, I mean, it just sounds like that from our perspective from the Senior Bowl, you've certainly have some nice edge rushers with some potential here, you know, some inside guys who can play the run and maybe develop into giving you some inside presences, disruptors, and then, you know, some mild surprises at linebacker in terms of what can be there, especially in Okereke. And then, you know, Long playing as well as he did, you know, certainly opens the door a little bit there. So, yeah, I mean, this sounds like an interesting class from a, you know, day two, day three standpoint when it comes to the seniors that were here.
Yeah, and there's one other linebacker that I probably should have mentioned. We just briefly brought him up earlier in the show, that being Terrell Hanks, that is garnering a lot of attention as a as that player that was people are trying to project favorably as Darius Leonard. And I think you're going through some of this with Drew Locke and the comparisons to Patrick Mahomes. You know, you're always looking. There's some recency bias as far as, you know, here's a, you know, a quote unquote smaller school player who you're not really sure what you're getting, and he comes to the Senior Bowl and looks okay. Well, unlike Darius Leonard, where people were excited to see him last year, Hanks came into this week with lots of expectations as far as he's always around the ball, he's athletic, he's got some good size. You know, is he going to be able to do what Leonard and other players have done in the past? I don't know that I saw that necessarily. He is clearly an aggressive playmaking player when he's got a free run. But there were times where he worked himself out of position when he was trying to shed a block. I don't know that he was as comfortable in coverage as we've seen players like Leonard and others over the years. He's definitely not afraid. There was a player on the first day in running back versus linebacker drills where, you know, the running back kind of leaks out and goes in one direction, and, you know, the linebacker is giving him a 5-yard cushion from his regular position behind the line of scrimmage. And Hanks came up immediately to the line of scrimmage and basically planted him into the upside-down garbage can that was representing the
Bruce
offensive
Anderson.
Line.
Yeah,
and in hindsight, looking back at that play, it was definitely an aggressive play. But I wonder how much of that was just circumstances with the footwork being what it was and the garbage can being in the way a little bit. But it shows, I think one of the things I like to look at in those drills is if the defender is back on his heels and waiting for the running back to come to him and then trying to react to the move, they're generally a lot less successful, unless they guess correctly, than a player that comes up and tries to dictate some part of the route itself. If you can get and you're allowed to put your hands on those guys within the first 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, and if you can do that and jam and reroute, you're a little bit more likely to be successful. It's not necessarily a habit you want to get into too much, because if the running back gets away from you, then you're grabbing and holding and those sorts of things. But, you know, I think you saw that with Okereke. You saw it to a certain extent with Long. I definitely saw it with Greenlaw, where those players were kind of coming downhill and trying to affect. If you know you're in man coverage, you may as well try to affect the route as best you can. We were seeing that from Hanks. But I don't know that he was as fluid as Okereke, and maybe possibly not as Greenlaw as well. But I do think that I don't think he did anything to hurt himself this week. I don't know that he stood out so much where, you know, somebody's going to chase after him in the way that the Colts chased down Leonard in the second round last year. But he's going to be an interesting name to track as well.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that in conjunction with Drew Locke and said, you know, the just kind of getting the comparison there. Since it's the end of the show, I kind of think about it in the standpoint of, you know, my wife does a lot of decorating and remodeling, and whenever she watches Chip and Joanna Gaines on HDTV and they talk about shiplap, and then she goes to like Home Depot and goes to, Lowe's, they sell shiplap, you know, supposedly things that, you know, flooring or wood that's supposedly shiplap, and shiplap literally comes from old ships that was used in that way. So they're not really selling shiplap there. So now, you know, when I'm sitting here watching people talk about Terrell Hanks and Drew Locke, and they're saying, oh, Patrick Mahomes and Darius Leonard, I'm thinking, oh, they're the Lowe's and Home Depot shiplap. It may look nice when you put it up in your house, but that's not really what you got.
It's not the same thing.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. So that's the long story short of it. But, you know, Gene, again, thanks again for, you know, providing these insights to everybody at the Rookie Scouting Portfolio podcast here. And if you are new to the podcast, you can subscribe to it at the RSP Cast on iTunes. It's also available on Google Play, Blueberry, and Stitcher. And, you know, please be, you know, if you feel like writing a review or sharing your thoughts about it, you can do that on iTunes and rate it, or you can email me at mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com, and let me know that I don't know my email address. And you know, also check out the site, www.mattwaldmanrsp.com, and the publication is in the works for the April 1 release and download date for the RSP publication that's been going on since 2006. With, you know, I have probably going to have close to 180 profiles of players this year at the running back, wide receiver, tight end, and quarterback positions. And the post-draft comes along with it. It's available 1 week after the draft. And that's a specialty that is a great tool in addition to the pre-draft for fantasy owners who want to, you know, just kind of get the basics on, you know, rankings and where they should pick these guys. And I give you kind of a rankings that are based on a sweet spot of what I think of them, but where you should probably pick them based on ADP, in addition to things that you can look at 3, 4, 5 years from now from these publications. So again, thanks to Gene Bramble, who always just does fantastic work over at Football Guys. And when he gets, you know, he slums it with me over here at the RSP site during the week at Mobile. You know, we appreciate him, and we appreciate you, and you guys have a good week.